So I thought we'd read from Bhagavad Gita today on chapter 7. We've been studying chapter 7 at the Wednesday night Gita classes. We're about to go into chapter 8, though, I think. So I wanted to look at text. It's near the end. I think it's 7:26. Or maybe 7:27. Krishna, he's talking about our position here in the material world, kind of how we've gotten captured and how we're staying captured. And so within that is the secret of how to get uncaptured. Yes, it's text 27. Does anyone know this chapter by heart? I think a lot of devotees have been studying this chapter. So, it starts out, Icha Dvesha Samutena. Everyone have it? Yeah. Icha Dvesha Samutena Danva Mohina Bharata Sarva Bhutani Sammoham Sarge Yante Parantapa. So please repeat after me. Icha Dvesha Samutena Danva Mohina Bharata Sarva Bhutani Sammoham Sarge Yanti Parantapa. So word meaning icha, desire, dvesha, and hate. So another way to say that would be attachment and aversion, or wanting and not wanting. Samutena, arising from. Dandva, duality. Mohena, by the illusion. Bharata, O Sayan of Bharata, Sarva, all, Bhutani, living entities, Sammoham, unto delusion, Sarge, while taking birth, Yanti, go, Parantapa, O conqueror of enemies. So now that we know the word meaning, let's chant the verse. Icha dvesha samutena Danva mohena bharata Sarva bhutani sammoham Sarge yante parantapa Icha dvesha samutena Danva mohena bharata Sarva bhutani sammoham Sarge yante parantapa. Any takers?
Icha dvesha samutena
Icha dvesha samutena
Dvandva mohena bharata
Dvandva mohena bharata
Sarva bhutani sammoham
Sarva bhutani sammoham
Sarge yanti parantapa
Icha dvesha samutena
Dvandena mohena bharata
Dvandena bharata
Sarva bhutani sammoham
Sarva bhutani sammoham
Sarge yanti parantapa
Sarge yanti parantapa
Icha dvesha samutena
Dvandva mohena bharata
Sarva
bhutani sammoham
Sarge yanti parantapa
Sarge yanti parantapa
Icha dvesha samut Samuthena
Icha Dvesha Samuthena
Dhanva Mohena Bharataha
Dhanva Mohena Bharataha
Sarva Bhutani Sammoham
Sarva Bhutani Sammoham
Sarga Yanti Parantapa
Sarga Yanti Parantapa Icha dvesha samutena Dhanva mohena bharata Sarva bhutani sammoham Sarve yanti parantapa.
Okay. O Sayana Bharata, O conqueror of the foe, all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by dualities arisen from desire and hate. Please repeat. O Sayana Bharata,
O conqueror of the foe,
all living entities
are born into delusion,
bewildered by dualities arisen from desire and hate. Purport. The real constitutional position of the living entity is that of subordination to the Supreme Lord, who is pure knowledge. When one is deluded into separation from this pure knowledge, he becomes controlled by the illusory energy and cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The illusory energy is manifested in the duality of desire and hate. Due to desire and hate, the ignorant person wants to become one with the Supreme Lord and envies Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pure devotees who are not deluded or contaminated by desire and hate can understand that Lord Sri Krishna appears by his internal potencies. But those who are deluded by duality and nescience think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is created by material energies. This is their misfortune. Such deluded persons symptomatically dwell in dualities of dishonor and honor, misery and happiness, woman and man, good and bad, pleasure and pain, etc. Thinking, this is my wife, this is my house, I am the master of this house, I am the husband of this wife. These are the dualities of delusion. Those who are so deluded by dualities are completely foolish and therefore cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's one way of looking at it. O Sayana Bharata, O conqueror of the foe, all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by dualities arisen from desire and hate. So in this verse is a succinct description by Krishna of our situation in the material world, or the condition of the soul bound in illusion, and how that illusion persists, basically. And so, we call it illusion, delusion, but it's not seeing the reality. It's mistaking, you know, the snake for the rope. And we do that all the time, or on a continual basis, from moment to moment. Thinking that I'm this body, I'm this mind. So Prabhupada mentions here that the Supreme Lord is pure knowledge, and when one is deluded into separation from this pure knowledge, he becomes controlled by the illusory energy. So there is actually no separation, but we think there's separation. Let's put on my glasses. I can't see anybody's face. Here we go. Yeah, so where is actually this delusion occurring? Or the illusion? The soul is Sat-Chit-Ananda, Vigraha. Sat means eternal, right? And Chit means full of knowledge. And Ananda is blissful. So if we are Sat-Chit-Ananda, and also we have form, Vigraha, where is the delusion going on? In the mind. So in the mind, the delusion is going on. The hot and cold. Actually, in the mind, we're labeling everything. So in the mind, the delusion, this is, you could say this is our battleground. This is where the war is taking place. The delusion is in the mind. The suffering is in the mind. And the soul, he's aloof. He doesn't lose his Sat-Chit-Ananda nature. So the delusion, the illusion, the suffering is taking place in the mind. And how is it manifested? As desire and hate. You know, in our minds, we like something, we don't like something. Right? And this is going on, you know, Republicans don't like the Democrats, and the Democrats don't like the Republicans. Or, you know, the Hindus don't like the Muslims, and the Muslims don't like the Hindus. This desire and hate is going on. It's going on in the mind. Right. If you're born in America, then when you were born, when I was born, a long time ago, then you hated the communists, right? And if you were born in Russia, you hated the capitalists. And so, where is this hate taking place? It's going on in the mind, and it's going on because of labels, right? We're labeling American, we're labeling Hindu. When we actually observe what's going on in the mind and the body without labels, there's not much going on. There's pictures, there's sensations, right? Sense perceptions, right? We see things, we hear things, we taste things. We smell things, we feel things, and then some picture is made, and that picture is in the mind, and then we give it a label, you know, of good or bad, or cancer, or the influenza, or it's a sensation, right? Just like we have a painful sensation in our body, or an itching sensation. It's just a sensation. But we give it some label, like, oh, that's an itching sensation. That's a painful sensation. That's a pleasurable sensation. And it's the label is actually causing more of our experience than the sensation itself. So a lot of our desire and hate, a lot of the duality that we're experiencing is made up in our own mind, is what I'm trying to say here. And the experience is increased, or the duality is increased, or the sense of hate, or the sense of desire is increased by our resistance to it. How many of you have small children here? Well, not so small anymore, huh? Or do you remember as a small child, did you have to go to the doctors? Did you have to get an injection? Like vaccines? Did they vaccine in India pretty regularly? Yes, they do. You know, like for example, what do you get routinely?
There is one vaccine is the MMWR, it's mumps, measles, whooping cough. It's given all over the world. Hmm. polio vaccine.
And polio vaccine.
Polio and hepatitis.
Smallpox? They don't do that anymore, huh?
I don't think so. It has been eradicated.
Right. Although it's in a vault somewhere, right?
That's right.
So when I was a child, we got polio vaccine had just come in out, so we got that as a sugar cube. So that was fun. That was I like sweets, attached to sweets. But the smallpox, you had to get a number of injections in one site. Many little needle sticks make a little circle there. And then it would scab up and be painful. So, and then tetanus, and then the, what do they call it here? They call it DPD or something like that, diphtheria. Anyway, when you go to the doctor and you get a shot as a little child, what do most children do? They scream. They scream before they even get to the doctors, right? Just knowing that they're going to go to the doctor and get a shot, they're already in terror and they're already screaming, right? There's no sensation yet going on in the body. So this pain, this fear, this hate is all going on in the mind. So there's a super resistance to the anticipation of getting a shot. And in many cases, especially if you get a good nurse, you know, they put a little swab on there and the needle's in and out before you know it. They're really good. And before the child can even feel the pain of the needle, it's already in and out. And the sensation itself was very temporary and very short. All that pain was in the mind, in the resistance. And so this is what Krishna's talking about here. This duality we're in of desire and hate, it's in the mind, and we're reinforcing it so it continues. And we stay deluded, thinking we're the mind and we're the body. And this process continues on like that. And Krishna, he's pointing it out so clearly, so that, you know, I mean, why is Krishna telling this to Arjuna? Or why is Krishna telling this to all of us? So that we see where our work has to be done, basically, and how we are kind of caught in this cycle of desire and hate, and how it's existing in the mind. It's interesting, I think, in the second chapter, Arjuna, he wanted to know, he asked Arjuna, Arjuna asked Krishna, he wanted to know, what is the symptoms of someone who's self-realized? He says, how does he walk, how does he sit, how does he talk, what's he like? And Krishna says, prajahati yada kamans sarvan partha manogatan atmanyevatmani tushta astita pragas tadochite. I love this example. He says, one who gives up desire, sense desire, that arises out of mental concoction, and who finds satisfaction in the self alone, he's transcendentally situated. What a beautiful explanation. Huh? There's no dogma to that explanation. Yeah, you could use this criteria for, you know, any spiritual practitioner, no matter what religion, you know, they subscribe to, that one who is on a transcendental platform, he's beyond this duality. He sees that the sense desire is just a creation of the mind, and he finds satisfaction in himself alone. So it's an internal process of going within. So a lot of what's going on in our mind, what's going on in our bodies, it's just going on kind of automatic, and we're just in identification for it. And we never stop to really kind of look at our attachments and our aversions. Right? We itch, we scratch. Before we know it, we've already started scratching. We feel an itch, we scratch. And a lot of what goes on in our life, a lot of our attachments and aversions, they go on almost subconsciously. So what are some of our attachments for those who are brave, you know?
Family,
okay. And so what would, if we're thinking in terms of duality, what would be the opposite of that? You have attachment to family. What would be an aversion to that? Because it's, you know, they're two sides of the same coin. Oh, yeah, some people, you know, when they hear the word sannyas, it's like, oh, get me out of here. There's an aversion to that because of family attachment, or how about loneliness? Or not, you know, what if my family leaves, or what if I have to go work somewhere and I can't be with my family? So that would be the opposite side of the coin. What's another attachment we have?
Property.
Property. Well, that's a nice attachment to have if you're fortunate enough. No. I have some property. Well, actually, the bank has it. Attachment to the body. So can you give an example of that?
So some kind of attachment is in that way we always entertain to our body.
So attached to the body, bodily being comfortable, taking care. We have to take care of the body, but you know, we don't have to spend so much time in front of the mirror.
Right.
So what would be an aversion? So say an attachment would be what? To your body. Let's get real specific. You know, like, what do you like to eat?
Very health-conscious diet and doing jogging, whatever.
Are you speaking personally?
I don't, but I...
Well, how about personally?
Personally, I do play just to stay fit, not for too exciting. Like, I just play so that exercise, that's it.
Okay, now what would be an aversion to that for you?
Not play.
Not being able to do that?
Yeah.
Right. So you might resist that?
No, I come to Gita class instead.
Oh, very good. Anything else? Any attachments and aversions people want to bring up?
Huh?
Stock market. So checking out the stock market, kind of going with the up. So these attachments and aversions, they're going on in our mind through our conditioning. It's actually attachments and aversions. You know, for the mind and body, the mind and body have attachments and aversions. And that's actually not so much the problem. The problem is if we're thinking we're the mind or the body and identification with it. Because the body is going to feel hot, right? And it's going to feel cold. And it's going to feel comfortable and it's going to feel uncomfortable. And so there's always going to be some situation because the world's always changing. So Krishna says, Matra Sparshas Tukuntaya Sitoshna Sukha Dukha Da Agama Paino Nityas Tamsitikshasva Bharata. In the second chapter, where is it? Like 2:14 or something like that. He says, Matra Sparsha Stukunteya Sitoshna Sukadugada. Happiness and distress, the dualities, are coming and going like winter and summer seasons. So he advises tolerance. And tolerance doesn't mean you just have to grin and bear it. But really it means to not make a big deal out of it, you know, not to resist it. If we resist it, like the child going to get the shot, then there's so much pain and suffering. But if there's no resistance and there's acceptance, that's tolerance, then there's no suffering. So the resistance occurs in the mind. The resistance is like the glue that keeps this duality together and holds it in place. You know, we desire something, we can't get it, we resist it. We don't want something, and it comes anyway, we resist it. And then that's what we think about, right? That becomes pictures in the mind, and we spend a lot of time thinking about how I'm going to avoid something I don't want, or how I'm going to get something that I do want. So where's all this occurring? It's occurring in the mind. So there's a simple process for overcoming this duality and overcoming desire and hate. A real simple process. It's chanting Hare Krishna. Chanting Hare Krishna here and now, you know, in the moment. So in the moment, there really is no duality. There really is no pain. There really is no suffering. In the moment, you can't even be in your mind. Now, I'm not saying 2/10 of a second ago, but in this very moment, what is there? In this very moment, what do you find if you actually check inside in the exact moment? What is there? There's simply awareness. Right? And in a moment later, then there's a memory, you know, or a projection. And in those memories and in those projections is the duality and is the suffering. And so if we chant Hare Krishna all the time, 24 hours a day, incessantly, in the moment, then there's no more duality, and we're connected with the supreme knowledge. We don't feel this separation. So separation is duality. And there is no separation. But when we're feeling separate, then this duality begins, and then we become absorbed in the mind, and the duality of desire and hate causes us to think that we are the thought, that we are the sensation of this mind and body. The desire and hate, the resistance around it, is what's the glue that's causing that identification. And so as soon as we notice that, the solution then is to return to the being that we are, which is presence, which is connected, which is not separate, which has no duality, which is eternal, which is full of awareness, and which is satisfied and blissful within itself. But that we find in the eternal now, they like to call it. Really, time is an illusion, because for the soul, time is an illusion. Time's really in the mind, and it's very relative, right? You know, the Indra Gopa germ, you know, lives for a few moments. And Lord Brahma, he lives, you know, for eons and eons. And we look at the life of, you know, like a cat or a dog and think, oh, 17 years, that's so short. And a human being, 80. So our concepts of times are completely relative. And they're also, you know, multidimensional, but we're in the three dimension. And so, really, for the soul, what kind of time is there? There is no time, because the soul is eternal. So the time is in the mind. And what we think, a lot of times we're thinking, you know, our thinking is stuck in the past. I mean, how much time do we actually spend in the present? Chanting Hare Krishna. So we're addicted to thinking about the past or worrying about the future. And what does our mind tell us? Our mind tells us that if we don't worry about the future, something bad's going to happen. Yeah. But what's the bad thing that's happening right now as you're worrying about the future? You're eating up, you know, the mind's eating up our life with worry. The only time we can do anything about anything is right now. Actually, we can only worry about the past right now, or worry about the future right now, or lament about the past right now. And that's just all mind stuff. And it's duality. And then we're caught in the desire and in the hate, and that continues the suffering. So the real solution is to chant Hare Krishna. It sounds so simple, you know, when we tell people just chant Hare Krishna. Sounds too simple. But that really is the solution. But chanting Hare Krishna means that when we chant Hare Krishna, we're actually aware of what we're doing when we're doing it. Right? When we're chanting the name of Krishna, we're actually calling out to Krishna, aware that he's present in his name right now with us. You know, not at some future time, but right now. And then we'll feel peace. Then we'll feel complete. And, you know, the matra sparshas, you know, the toleration part becomes very easy, because we see, well, yes, the mind is going to do these things. It has its job to do. And the body is going to go through whatever it's going to go through. And if we don't resist it, actually it tends to do better and heal itself, take care of itself much better than if we're resisting, worrying, etc., etc.
You also mentioned about the verse, a couple of verses, 255, 256, which was about controlling sense gratification. So is that a process in itself, or is that going to come about automatically by chanting Hare Krishna?
Thank you. It is a process in itself. It's both. Krishna recommends it. He says that if you control your senses, he says you can only control your senses by controlling your mind. And if you control your mind and you control your senses, then you'll have steady intelligence and you'll become peaceful and you'll become self-realized. So when we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're controlling our mind. And we're also controlling our senses. And we're also, if we're actually chanting Hare Krishna, then we're out of duality. And we're out of the mind, really. We're never in the mind. The mind really is contained within us. but we think we are the mind. So as long as we're chanting Hare Krishna in devotion, you know, avoiding the 10 offenses, not maintaining material attachments, but actually focused on what we're doing in the moment, then the senses are controlled, the mind is controlled, and the identification where the mind and the body begins to dissolve. Any other questions or comments?
So you said originally the source is Sachidananda Vigraha, right? So the mind is the reason why we have this duality. Basically, the mind is concocting desire and hatredness. So, see, originally also we have the mind. Is that called spiritual mind, or is it just part of this matter?
Can I take one step back about your question? Sure. See, originally the soul is Sat-Chit-Ananda. See, when you think about that, it sounds like the soul is not Sat-Chit-Ananda now, right? Originally. But right now, you are Sat-Chit-Ananda, right? Is that true?
My question was, yeah. I am Sachidananda. My soul is Sachidananda, but at what point you acquire this mind?
Ah.
And do you have a concept of spiritual mind? I mean, right now we have the mind which is the cause of this duality.
Yes.
So that was my question. So at what point do you acquire the mind? And is that because of acquiring such a mind that we fall into this material illusion, or because the soul is subject to illusion, that's when we acquire the mind? That's what my question is.
So question is, do we acquire the mind and fall into illusion, or have we what was the second part?
Yeah. Do we acquire the mind and because of the mind speculating and fall into illusion, or do we actually fall into illusion and because of that we acquire the mind and then perpetually undergo an illusion? Because originally we are spirit souls and by that definition we are never under illusion.
That's one way to look at it. But that's looking at it from the point of view that the mind and the body is a problem. See, but when there's no identification, there's no problem. Even if you have a body and a mind, it doesn't mean that you're going to fall into illusion. See what I'm saying? Because you are Sat-Chit-Ananda Vigraha. The problem is we're enamored by this body and mind. You know, we take the thoughts in our mind very seriously, as if it's me. And that's the ahankara, that's the false ego, causing the identification. So, in the spiritual, you know, spiritually we also have a body and mind, but it's a spiritual body and mind. And so, there's no problem. And for the realized soul, there's no problem with a material body and mind either. Because there's no identification. Like I was just saying, you are Sat-Chit-Ananda. I'm Sat-Chit-Ananda. You know, how are we? We're always Sat-Chit-Ananda. We're always now, we're always eternal. But we forget it because we're identified with the body and the mind. But we're never, you know, when we say originally, it sounds like we were then, but we aren't now. But we are now. You know, we're just as eternal now as we ever were, and just as conscious and aware as we ever were. And in the soul itself is that satisfaction. So I don't know if I answered your question. I kind of looked at it from a different point of view. Sure.
Mind and the body, they are all the result of the Supreme Lord's engineering work.
Is that on?
Are you on? Yes.
Oh, okay.
So the Lord has created this mind and body for all of us, and that is also part of His creation. And we need to give it its due share of respect. So the mind is actually, it deserves a lot of respect. God has, we cannot think without mind. The thoughts are the mind. So the mind actually has been given to us, and it is up to us to use it or misuse it. I tend to misuse it, but ideally I should be using it. And but that is my problem. And so that was the another viewpoint. So it is there eternally with us, and it is an asset, not a liability.
It's a tool.
Tool, yes.
So is it the soul's nature? I mean, why do we misuse it sometimes? Is it our nature and somehow we have to change it? And it's true, like your points are pretty practical, that if we take its shelter, then all our miseries are gone, all our distress is gone. But why again and again we play with the material energy, we come in contact with the material energy, we do mistakes, we try to be controller, we do so many wrong things, and then we get distressed, we take its shelter, we get peace, we get happiness. And then again we try to do the same things again and again. So is it the soul's nature, or I mean what's the stable solution?
Well, the solution is right here, you know. Coming and hearing Bhagavad Gita, you know, from Lord Krishna. So you know, it's true the soul is eternal, you know, so time here in this material world again is a relative thing. So the soul comes here and gets trapped in illusion, and then gradually surrenders again to the Lord. And so it's a setup. You know, that you know, the soul is imitating the Supreme Lord here. And so the soul has this desire to want to be the center, to be number one, and it can't be. So Krishna creates a playground for that to occur. He's fulfilling our desires, basically. And when we get tired of playing around and we're ready to go back to Godhead, then he makes arrangement for that too. And that's what everyone's doing.
How should we subdue this nature of playing around?
Krishna says, you know, the mind, you know, can be your best friend or your worst enemy. And so we are superior to the mind. You know, the mind is really, it's nothing compared to the soul. So Krishna says, Indriyani Pranyahur, Indriyabhya Paramanaha Mananas. To pro buddhir yo buddhe puratastu sa. At the end of the, near the end of the third chapter, he says to Arjuna, higher than the sense, higher than material elements are the senses, higher than the senses is the mind, higher than the mind is the intelligence, and higher than that is the soul. And he says, knowing that you're superior to all these things, take control of yourself. And so on the level of the soul, you know, there was something someone said here, you know, that the mind, you know, if we didn't have the mind, then we couldn't think. Well, that's true. As if by thinking we actually come to know anything. The knowingness is there within the soul by the mercy of the super soul. And it's not by thinking that we know anything. That's a trick of the mind. So we don't even need the mind to know anything. The mind gets in the way, trying to figure out what the soul is. Right? We're sitting in here with our minds trying to figure out our soul. And the mind can't do that. Yeah. The mind and the intelligence can bring us to the place where we can know the soul. And sometimes the example is given that if you're in a dark cave, and there's no light, if you have a little candle, you can find your way till you get to the end of the cave and you come out into the sunlight. But once you're in the sunlight, then the candle has no more use. And the candle cannot reveal the sun either. And so the soul is like the sun compared to the mind. And so there is a point where we have to let go of the mind and see what it can't do. And that means we don't have to give it so much importance. You know, we just have to be aware of what it's up to and then keep it in line. Just, you know, the example of the reins and the horses and the driver. You know, so we have to hold the reins and we have to know from moment to moment where we're putting our attention. Because the mind is creative. You know, we're part and parcel of Krishna. So we have creative abilities. And we do that with the mind. And so wherever we put our attention, as Vaisheshika Prabhu is so fond of saying, where attention goes, energy flows, and it's a fact. You know, wherever we put our attention, if we worry about the future, basically we're, you know, making all our worries come true by holding those pictures. And we're doing that with the mind, you know, by putting the energy of the soul into it. It's manifesting. And so, you know, if you're in a car and you're the driver and there's nobody else in there, who else is going to steer the car? You know, we can't expect anyone else to do it. We can get directions about how to drive the car from the spiritual master, from Krishna. They can say, you know, turn left, turn right. But, you know, individually, we're the ones there holding the steering wheel. We each have to fly our own plane. You know, we are born alone and we die alone. And so we have to become aware of what our thinking is, and then we have to shift it, you know, back inwards towards the soul, towards Krishna, and engage our senses in Krishna's service, engage the mind in Krishna's service, then it becomes our friend. And if we just let it continue its pattern according to the attachments and aversions that we've developed, then not much will change. And that, in a sense, that's maintaining, you know, material attachments. Because wherever we put our focus, that's the maintenance aspect of it. So did that answer your question? Yeah?
I like your point of, like you mentioned, that you should have awareness where your mind is going and then pull the reins out like horses and things like that. It's very practical. Thank you, Prabhu.
Or, like, we didn't get into it too much, but you can focus on what your attachments and aversions are, and you can look for resistance. That's the place to begin, is the resistance. And the soul is you know, is pure light, pure awareness. So wherever we put our awareness, there's no darkness. You know, wherever there's Krishna, there's no Maya. And the darkness goes away. So all this stuff is going on within ourselves because we're not looking there. You know, and we have a lot of habitual attachment and aversions that we maintain because we don't really look at them. This is what Lord Chaitanya meant when he said that we have to become gardeners. You know, that when you get the bhakti lata bij and the seed of devotion for Krishna begins to grow, but then around that plant, weeds come up. And the weeds are also getting the water, which is our attention. And so wherever those weeds are, we have to actually do that work, you know, of gardening and go in and see, oh, what's there. And it's not that we have to artificially restrain ourselves. We just have to look at what's really going on and, you know, become introspective. Like when we're chanting, we have to make an effort to focus rather than just, oh, it's just too hard and let me chant, but I'm just going to think, you know, about the stock market or whatever else. You know, as Mahatma Prabhu calls it,
courtesy japa.
Courtesy japa, right. courtesy japa. Out of courtesy, we're chanting our number of rounds because we said we would. But while we're chanting, we're just, you know, meditating on everything else except for Krishna. So, thank you for your question. Way in the back. Wow, Prashant. Hare Krishna. Shivaratri today, really? You sure it's not tomorrow? Oh. Today?
I'm in India, but
Sunday. Well, that's why, yeah, I got confused because I'm on, my computer's on Tokyo time, so there'd be any Indian time. So you want to know about Shivaratri?
I never took the trouble to find out why. It's okay.
So what does Ratri mean, night?
Yes.
Right. So it's the night of Shiva? So who can say about Shivaratri? Can someone say?
Actually, I heard a lot of glorification of Shiva from Hari Guru Prabhu today.
Oh, Hari Guru Prabhu, please say something about Shivaratri. I have to pass the buck because I really don't know very much myself.
Okay, Jay.
Do you know anything?
I really don't know much, so I don't know what they're referring to here.
I believe it is one night when Shiva sleeps and has relaxation. He doesn't do much work today. So this is for the, this is the night when everybody else is supposed to stay alert and awake and vigil so that nothing wrong happens in the world.
Oh. So it's a custom to stay awake all night?
You can, yeah. I will not.
Oh. I'm very attached to my regular program. Ram Swami.
I read something about it yesterday. Yesterday. And actually, according to the ISKCON calendar, Shivaratri is tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe, you know, some others may be observing Shivaratri today. So the story is that every month, a particular day is very dear to Lord Shiva. It's called Shivaratri. And out of all these months, the day which comes in this month, it's called Mahashivaratri, which is very, very dear to Lord Shiva. Mother Parvati once asks Lord Shiva about, you know, which day is dearer to you, and Lord Shiva describes that this particular day is very, very dear to him, and whoever observes fasting the whole day and stay awake the whole night, worshipping him with the bay leaves and other paraphernalia, he says that he becomes very, very dear to him, and all his sins gets washed away, and in the end he will return to Mahesh Dham, which is the abode of Lord Mahesha. There is a story also in connection to this. Once there is a hunter, I forgot the name. Kanapa. I think it's not that. I don't know the name. He was living in a forest, and he was on a hunting mission. And that day, after much struggle, he hunts a deer. And but because of weather, it was raining, and weather was not favorable. He couldn't go home on that day. So the whole day also he struggled a lot to hunt, and he couldn't eat anything. And during the night time, he climbed a tree. And on that tree, he was just thinking about his family, that you know, his family members must have been starving by now, and he was just weeping with tears. And as he was doing that, there is a shivaling beneath that tree, and that tree happens to be bale tree. So as he was just weeping, he was just he had nothing to do. He was just taking the leaves off and throwing it on the ground, and those leaves happened to fall on Shivalinga, and also the tears of his eyes, they washed away. They washed the Shivalinga. So after that, it's a long story, but in the end, he becomes a king. He immediately, you know, gets promoted to the level of a king. And due to the grace of Lord Shiva, even in the next life also, he remembered his previous life. And he continues to observe Mahashivaratri during his next life also. This is a very, very shortcut story, but actually it's a long story. Even Vaishnavas also sometimes observe Shivaratri. Once Nanda Maharaj, once upon a time, along with all the denizens of Vrindavan, he desired to observe Mahashivaratri. And Srila Prabhupada quotes that from this we understand that Nanda Maharaj once upon a time he desired to observe Shivaratri. It means that he was not observing it regularly, but once upon a time he desired to observe it. So that's mostly it.
Wow, that's pretty good, Ram Swami. Thank you very much. How was that, Prasant? Yeah. Thank you very much. I didn't know that.